News time now, 8:14. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, coming up next Thursday, September 12th, Action Utah, inviting you to come connect with your state legislatures. In the studio to tell us more about the event and what Action Utah does, I have the executive director, Andrea Himoff, who is also a Park City resident. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what Action Utah is and what you guys do.
Yeah, Action Utah is a nonpartisan community advocacy organization that empowers Utahns to get civically engaged to impact the issues that they care about most. So I co-founded this organization back in 2016 after the presidential elections when there was a big surge in the number of people who really wanted to get involved and felt they didn't have a voice from both sides of the aisle. And we really believed that civic engagement was one of the most important things that people could do to come together and heal hyperpartisanship and kind of balance out extremist voices and create a greater alignment between elected officials and constituents in order to tackle the big problems that we're facing. So we founded this organization and now have 6,000 members around the state. We work on educating community members, teaching them advocacy skills, creating leadership development programs, and advocacy opportunities on the top issues in Utah.
Yeah, so when you say 6,000 members, it's kind of a dues-based?
It isn't. It's free and accessible to all Utahns, anyone who lives around here or even from here and cares about Utah issues.
So how's the organization funded?
Good question. We are funded mostly by our membership, not through dues, just donations. We have a couple of grants supporting us as well. And we earn a little bit of income from some of our bigger events, but we try to keep them as free as possible to make them accessible to all community members.
Yeah. So talk to me a little about some of the issues you guys are addressing.
Well, we look at data that shows us which issues Utahns care about the most, and we take the stance of the majority on those issues. So they can run across the gamut from public health issues, families and communities, environmental stewardship, and government issues. Some of our top ones are health care, K-12 education, and air quality. We tackle a number of issues, though.
Yeah. Now, do you take a stand on the issues?
We do when there is a clear majority of Utahns who are interested in a subject matter. So, for instance, those are the top three issues in Utah that I just mentioned. People around the state really want to see clean air, and it's pretty simple. There's data to support exactly what they want. They do want some government assistance to help them change their behaviors and take some personal responsibility for cleaning up the air. So that's the kind of data that we look at to say, okay, these policies do what people want, and they meet the needs that people have.
All right. So you're based out of Salt Lake?
We are, although technically here I am up in Park City. And so we're kind of across the Wasatch, front and back, but we work around the state.
Yeah. So any other kind of satellite offices or just you kind of go to just different areas to do different outreach?
We go to different areas. We've been in northern and southern Utah, and we try to live stream as many events as we can to reach people who are unable to get to the state capitol easily or to get to the events that we hold in the Wasatch Front.
All right. So why a meeting then in Park City? Just another opportunity to kind of outreach?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, Park City matters to me being from here, but it's also a pretty unique place because we have five state legislators here, none of whom actually live here in Park City. And I think it's so tremendously important as part of civic engagement to get to know the people who represent you and have dialogue with them so that a representative who doesn't live here knows what people here want and need. And the only way to do that is to get to meet them, to talk with them, and hear what their priorities are, try to have a voice in the issues they're working on, you know, big things that we're talking about around the state, like tax reform. You were just talking about vaping on the local news, firearm safety with all of the events that have been happening around the country. These are some pretty big things that our representatives and senators are working on, and this is a chance for people to get to know them, talk with them, ask them questions, and learn how to communicate with them.
Okay, so as I mentioned, it's happening a week from tonight. It'll be on the third floor in the community room of the Park City Library. What time?
It starts at 6 o'clock, and you can find more information about it at actionutah.org. We would just love to see a good turnout so people can get to know these people.
Yeah, and you're asking people to RSVP so you know how many chairs to set up.
It's very helpful to us, yes.
Yeah. And you managed to get, again, all five legislators who do represent Summit and Wasatch County.
That's true. We work with a lot of these legislators on Capitol Hill across the aisle, and they're really great people, and I think it would be great for our community to get to know them better.
Okay, so we've got Senator Alan Christensen, Senator Ron Winterton, Representative Brian King, Representative Quinn, and Representative Logan Wild. Brian King, of course, the only Democrat of the bunch. Who's going to be leading the discussion?
That will be me, so I'll see people there.
Okay. Are you asking people to submit topics, or you'll get the conversation started and then what, open the floor to the audience?
Yeah, we're going to have a little bit of a panel discussion so that we can hear from our legislators, let them introduce themselves and what they're working on, what their priorities are, and why they think engagement matters, how people can communicate with them, and then answer the questions that we have in the audience about that stuff.
Okay, so the more the merrier in this case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us about?
This is my first time on KPCW, so I'm very excited to be here, and I'm really looking forward to getting the Park City community more engaged in the activities that are happening at the state capitol. So very happy to be introducing ourselves here today.
Okay, and you'll be live streaming the event then next Thursday?
I will be live streaming, and you can find it on Facebook at Action Utah.
Okay. Andrea, hey, thanks for coming in.
So a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
That's Andrea Himhoff, again, the Executive Director of Action Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Council recently voted to allow people 65 and older to use pedal-assist e-bikes on any trail in Park City. That joins people as well with mobility disabilities as the exception to the rule. For all other riders, e-bikes are only allowed on paved trails. Andre Shumatov, founder of bicycle shop and rental center Park City Bike Demos, joins us now with his perspective on what seems to be a pretty split issue in our community. Good morning, Andre.
Good morning.
So you did, at the council meeting, speak in favor of allowing Class 1 pedal-assist e-bikes on trails at both city council hearings on the e-bike ordinance. Have you always supported that ordinance, or has your perception of e-bikes on dirt trails changed?
It's actually changed. I'd say as little as maybe even 6 months ago or a year ago, I was fairly opposed to them personally, just from like a personal perspective. I didn't quite fully understand them. You know, I'd be going up Armstrong, lugging along, and, you know, someone who was clearly not in shape would come flying by me, and I'd be, you know, just have that typical, like, who's that guy? And I didn't quite fully understand them. And then just, so one is at the store. And by the way, yesterday was actually my last day after 4.5 years. And the reason I'm here is mostly just because I care about it and I care about the issue. And I think people should know. I think there's a lot of misinformation about it, et cetera. But basically, you know, we bought some e-bikes mostly because we were told we should. And what happened is they sold, and then we got some more, and they sold, and then we got some more, and they sold. And so all of a sudden we realized there was major consumer demand, and it was our customers who started educating us. And they said, look, you guys just don't understand this. And I started looking. Wasatch County, Corner Canyon, a gazillion trail networks allow them, and I'm like, what was the process that allowed us to effectively ban e-bikes here, and what are the actual legitimate concerns? So I started poking around, and that's sort of how we got to where we are, including with City Council, lots of emails, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and certainly, I mean, given as part of the business that you had and have now since sold, I mean, if you're seeing the majority of e-bike sales and rentals come from the trail bikes, I mean, it's certainly in your best interest to have
them. To have them legal and have them understood. So basically, there are four types of e-bikes. So the term e-bike is sort of like the term motorcycle, which is really, really broad in range. And everything from like a moped to a Harley is a motorcycle. And it's the same with e-bikes. So what the city is talking about are called Class 1 e-bikes. And they're 250-watt small electric motors that are added to mountain bikes to allow them to basically go uphill a little bit faster. And And so I realized after I had spoken the first time in front of city council that I'd actually only ridden one once. And so I, you know, I've since gone and logged my times and come up with real world data. And the truth is that's overkill because this is e-mountain bikes, use of class one, are widespread. They're in trail networks throughout the world.
We're
just a little bit behind the curve. And now what's happening is the market is pushing on us. We were seeing at the shop as many as two or three conflicts per week. We would have, you know, what I'd call like fairly aggressive locals, which is, in my eyes is not the Park City way, not the Park City that I've ever known in the 17 years that I've been here, enforcing and generally berating tourists, people of poor health conditions, elderly people who said, look, I know how to ride a bike. I've been riding my whole life. I'm just 65 or I don't have, you know, lung capacity for 8,000 feet. Lung capacity for 8,000 feet, it's like literally taking one of your lungs and chopping it in half, 30% loss. So all of a sudden these people can catch up and there's so much sort of division and polarization on this issue, unfortunately.
I guess the issue is, though, is, I mean, who's out going to be patrolling to make sure that these are class one bikes?
Well, no one, and I don't think anyone should be. I think it's, what's the difference, you know? So that's the point, is that there's all this, it's sort of like saying, well, because they can go 20 miles an hour, like, there's going to be mayhem. And there's already mayhem because, frankly, we don't have enough either trailhead parking. We have, I think, the second or third biggest trail network in the country. However, you know, our what I call our boulevards, like Armstrong, Mid-Mountain, we only have a few of those. And so to me, this is a normal growth issue that needs to be addressed anyways. And unfortunately, e-bike is sort of proving to be a little bit of like a bad guy. Whereas the truth is we're just not, I think it just needs a little bit more adjustment for the reality that 3,000 homes are coming within 5 miles within the next 5 years. 30,000 homes are coming within 10 miles of Park City within the next 5 to 6 years. So we need to address this issue anyways. And e-bikes aren't the problem. It doesn't require patrolling. It's just like a mountain bike. It just has a pedal assist motor.
Yeah, so, but there are beefier ones that can go faster than that.
But that's not what we're talking about on the trails. And they don't. And nobody makes those for mountain bikes. That's the equivalent of riding a dirt bike on the trail where it has a throttle. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about bikes with 250-watt electric motors, you know, and a small battery to assist you generally going uphill.
And so that is that what you're telling me, that all the rental shops are renting?
Yes. Every rental shop, every retailer, that's what we're renting. With exception, there's only one, which is Pedego, has throttle assist bikes with mountain tires. I don't know what the policy is. I don't know if anyone is using those on the trails. That's what you generally see cruising around town. But every other shop in town, including ours, and that's where the growth is. I think class one is 93% market share.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you were renting these bikes out, you know, I mean, you say your last day. I mean, until last Thursday, it was basically illegal to use them. So what are you telling them? Don't ride on the trails?
Yeah, we say don't ride them on the trails. The people who are experienced with them, which is the majority of the people who come and rent them, say, look, I don't know what's wrong with you guys here in Park City. You don't understand this issue. You guys are behind the times. So we had a family, Germans, for example. So e-bike is 60-70% market share in Europe already. It's already widespread in every ski area, every ski town, et cetera, and it makes so much sense. It's such a juggernaut, and I'm not saying that all bikes are going to be e-bikes, but I think it's very realistic to expect that within 3, maybe 4 years, at least half of all mountain bikes will have electric assist. And meanwhile, we have the second or third largest trail network in the country that's effectively banned them, that misunderstands the bicycles and has banned them.
One thing people have expressed concern about is the impact to the trails. Have we found that e-bikes tear up the trails more than regular mountain bikes? And I'm going to just point out that have a look at what 300 carbon fiber mountain bikes did to Down Dog in a day on Saturday.
Sure.
And that's all they did was use their brakes. I mean, we're talking about bikes that weigh three times as much.
Yeah. So let's see, how would I say it is, I've looked closely at it. I believe that I'm fairly open-minded about most of the concerns. After City Council vocalized a lot of the concerns at the first meeting, I actually went and rode one two more times. I logged my data, and I expected to have beliefs that e-bikes didn't belong in certain places, they would have negative consequences, et cetera. And I literally made a list of, like, what are the benefits and what are the drawbacks? And so this was one of them. What's the trail damage? And I fixed hiking trails for 4 years in the Adirondacks, where I'm from, where it really rains and erosion from even foot traffic is substantial. So I, like, legitimately have 4 years of experience on that one issue. And so e-bikes generally use what are called 27.5 plus tires, which are much wider. They're 2.8 inches wide instead of 2.3. They weigh about 46, 48 pounds on average. That actually adds stability and weight to the bike to add traction both up and downhill. So you actually have less, in my opinion. And then BPSA, which is the Bike Industry Association, commissioned IMBA to create a report and say, what are the real impacts? And IMBA is very torn on this as well, as is their membership. So IMBA did this broad-ranging study. I believe it to be unbiased because they're not pro-e-bike. They're proceeding cautiously, I think, just as we are. But they said conclusively, e-bikes do not cause any more damage whatsoever. The only issue, I think, is just more riders. And I think the more riders will be maybe 5, 10% more riders, something like that. In the beginning, I think maybe a little bit more as it grows. I do know the cycling. So cycling and ski are both diminishing in user base. So I know that, but 1 in 5 Americans rides a bike fairly often. So I know that both industries view e-bike with a lot of potential to bring more people back into the sport. And to me, I think it's like, I don't know, kind of a blessing. The real reason we founded Park City Bike Demos was because I moved here to ski. And I got into biking, and I realized that living here and not riding a bike is sort of like living here and not skiing. And you can go out into nature, just like I did on an e-bike a week ago, and run into turkeys and deer, and they're whisper quiet, and all these other factors, and go experience nature. And the two rides that I've done on an e-bike personally are I was grinning ear to ear. I rode 6,200 feet of climbing. I'm a taller, larger man. So the amount of wattage that it takes to get me up to the crest is quite a bit, to the point that I've only ridden like the Pinecone Trail maybe 2 or 3 times ever. Even though that's a wonderful, wonderful trail, I just don't have the lungs and energy, even though I'm in shape and I'm fit. And I rode the crest, I rode Pinecone Trail. And so for those of us who are elite or have trail ability, and fundamentally it's sort of a bit of a new sport, it takes you farther. For those of us who can't keep up, it just lets us keep up with regular riders who do. And it makes mountain biking really, really enjoyable.
So were you ridiculed, though, again, because you at your
I
age
wasn't.
Aren't allowed to?
Yeah, so what happened is... And this is what I've seen, and we've started sort of, you know, it's a hard one. Put yourself in our position where, you know, we have a business. We keep growing every year. When I owned it outright, when I owned it, we were always struggling with cash flow, things like that. The business is doing phenomenal. It's a top-rated business in Park City. We built a whole system for giving people a wonderful experience consistently. So as a result, the shop is a top-rated shop online, according to the reviews in all of Park City. And
I just mean you personally, with you on an e-bike riding up to
the
crest.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Didn't people give you a hard time?
That's changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I started forwarding some of the nasty emails that we were getting based on, you know, bad experiences. What's happened, and this is why I'm here, it really sort of bugs me, is because when you know what you look like you're doing, people aren't going to berate you. the other aggro mountain bikers say, that guy knows what they're looking like. But if you're a tourist or a novice, they'll come right over and they'll say, what are you doing here on this thing? You're not allowed. You're different. You're on this different looking bicycle. That's it, you know? Well, and it's upsetting to me. It's like a small version of like discrimination or whatever. And I remember going to Telluride and getting like, you know, berated by a local because I'm some idiot because I didn't know how some poorly designed traffic intersection worked, you know? And it's off-putting, and that's never been the Park City way. And that's what's so frustrating.
Another issue I know is just the potential for injury. Again, the bikes are heavier, but you're telling me they're basically as heavy as my Univega back in 1984.
That's exactly it. It is legitimately as heavy as your Univega in 1984. It's as heavy as the first e-bikes. So I've heard all sorts of stuff. I've heard, well, our trails weren't designed for these. They weren't designed for long wheelbase 29ers with 150 millimeters of travel. That is what I ride. They weren't designed for the speeds we do, but it turns out the bikes can do it just fine. So I did listen. I heard comments about uphill speed from city council in particular. I had no idea that this was such a hornet's nest that we would be walking into, that people were so sort of forged in their opinion, our local city leaders and you know, people who manage trails, et cetera.
So back to the concern, though, about more injuries happening as a result of these heavy bikes.
Non-issue. And I know that Charlie at Mountain Trails has spoken mm-hmm. with Jefferson County. He said that, look, we ran a pilot. We had all these factors. Turned out we couldn't enforce it, so we just let everything go. Complete non-issue. Non-issue at Corner Canyon. Non-issue there. And the it's just like, well, novices at this gear do get injured, but novices don't like to put themselves on black diamond trails. You know, people make poor decisions, but that's the very small minority. I think, sure, we're going to see some effects, you know, but we have to be prepared for that. It's the right thing to do.
Mayor Andy Bierman mentioned this is something the state legislature will be looking at. We may have no say in it anyway. Is this something you would lobby then for?
Well, that's a hard one. There's been a lot of chatter about that. So, I mean, I very respectfully respect the approach, the position that city council's in specifically. Mayor Andy is, in my experience, one of the best mayors I've encountered and worked with in any capacity in Park Cities. He views the issues and makes the right decisions fundamentally. And so it's a complex issue. The issue here is that our process, that we keep kicking the can. We're stagnant on this issue. I understand the need for further reviewing it and opening up a task force. We have no idea who's going to be on there. We have no idea what their biases are. Someone who was suggested on it literally had spoken about anti-e-bike 2 seconds earlier at the last meeting, you know, and I'm not saying she doesn't belong. I think she does, and I think there should be a good diverse voice. I have confidence in Park City to do this correctly. Charlie has told me confidentially what he thinks the pilot program should look like. So I think that from a political standpoint, I think it's fine. The other issue is Summit Lands as opposed to opposition. They believe them to be motorized vehicles. And I understand that. People often make that mistake. The issue is that's sort of a technicality. And you could look at it both ways. But it's a small electric motor designed to aid primarily in uphill. The average speed difference is maybe 0.4 miles per hour faster, period. So all of the speedometers on all of our e-bikes average is like 9.6, 10.1 mile per hour on average. And in my own times on there, you know, I am not faster than racers or the elite on an e-bike, no matter how hard I pedal, period. You know, and I'm a fast rider. Okay. So anyways, that could be a real, sorry to answer so long-windedly, but that could be that's sort of our nuclear option. I know it's real. I know it's possible. I hate to do it because I have confidence in Park City to do the right thing. And it's not me that makes that call. It's just like anything, there's issues or whatever. But I do know that people at the state legislature believe Park City to be overly elite at times. And I unfortunately believe that this is a glaring example.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Andre, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Andre Shumatov. 8:48 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Matilda the Musical opens this Friday at the Egyptian Theater. On the phone to give us details, I have the production's director, Morgan Perry, with Ziegfeld Theater. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So it's a musical based on the Roald Dahl book, Matilda, and I guess how I know it, of course, the 1996 film starring Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman. So is this, you stick to the same plot?
Yes, really similar plot, but it is set in England, which is really fun.
Okay, so is it a show for kids, or is this adults only?
It is great for both. It's hilarious. So all the adults coming will be rolling, laughing at it. But it's also great for kids. It's very family friendly. It has about 8 kids in the show, and then some teenagers. So it's really fun.
Okay, so Matilda is played then by a youth actor?
Yes, yes.
Okay, tell us a little bit about your cast.
So I have 2 Matildas. They're both incredible. One of our Matildas has done numerous productions with us since she was 4 years old. The other Matilda just got off the Broadway touring cast of Anastasia as young Anastasia. So both of them are just incredible actors, actresses, and I think one's 9 and one's 8. So they're both very young, and they carry the entire show. They're in every scene. They sing and dance with all the other kids, and then, you know, they're, of course, in a lot of additional scenes, and they're both so, so talented.
Yeah, so I know the Ziegfeld Theater has a good partnership with the Egyptian Theater. Do you also do this production at your theater in Ogden?
Yes, we did. We did this production for 4 weeks down in Ogden.
Okay. So what else are you guys working on then?
We're going to open Rocky Horror, not the picture show, Rocky Horror the Musical on our stage. In October, and then we'll be bringing that up to the Egyptian as well.
Okay, something to look forward to. Well, anything else you'd like to tell us about Matilda the Musical?
It's just a delight from beginning to end. You'll laugh and cry and have a great time. Please come see it. It's just a fun, delightful story.
Okay. Hey, Morgan, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Again, Matilda the Musical opening Friday. It'll play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights, and then another 4-night run next week, Thursday through Sunday. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m., a little bit earlier for the Egyptian, except for Sundays, and the show starts at 6 p.m. Prices start at $23. ParkCityShows.com for more information.